Welcome to The Procurement Show.
Hello and welcome to The Procurement Show, the show that tackles the topics we all need to think about and sets out to explore the more interesting bits of procurement. I'm Jonathan O'Brien.
And I'm Paul Philpott, and this week I've been tasked with packing Jonathan's suitcase for a trip.
And you've got to fold those shirts, just so.
Are you a roller or a folder?
I'm a folder. Oh. I have a patented way of folding my own shirt.
Doesn't surprise me
20 years of travelling around the world. The reason we say that is because we're doing a travel special this week. Because most companies buy travel, some buy lots of travel, whether it's for employees or maybe delegates attending a sales conference. Travel, in fact, can be a big, big spend for many companies. Perhaps not as big as it once was pre-pandemic, we'll find out in just a moment, but it does seem that corporate travel is on the rise once again.
The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, unlocking the hidden value with your most important suppliers.
So we thought it was about time we did a procurement show travel special. Unfortunately, the budget didn't extend to send us all to the Seychelles to do it.
So we couldn't actually travel.
We're here in the studio. And to help me, we asked one of the leading travel companies to join us. Travel Counselors is a global network of independent travel agents with a presence in many countries around the world. They provide travel agency services for big and small companies and for individuals. And joining us live from Gibraltar is Tim Fitzgerald, who has 25 years experience in travel, including working for American Express. He's been a business development manager for many travel agencies and is now with Travel Counselors. He looks after some of the large corporate accounts. Welcome, Tim.
Good afternoon.
And joining us from Manchester is Scott Tempero. Scott has 30 years in the industry. He's also worked for American Express on the corporate travel side. He's worked doing travel in Australia, Canada, Thailand, US, and here in the UK. And Scott heads up the procurement for Travel Counselors, and so is responsible for securing some of the big deals with the airlines and the hotel chains and other providers. So welcome, Scott.
Thanks, Jonathan. Good to be here.
And finally, Karen Thornton is here live in the studio with us. Karen trumps the others with a massive 35 years in the industry. She's worked across many independent agencies and tour operators. And today, Karen is a travel expert specializing in personal or luxury travel packages and highly skilled at putting together those special bespoke packages. She describes herself as the more touchy-feely one. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Welcome to all three of you. It's really good that you can join us for this procurement show travel special. I'm already getting that holiday feeling like we're about to set off.
It's Travel Counselors.
Travel Counselors.
Not the people that make things go wrong, because they're the Travel Counselors.
Yes.
Yes.
Travel Counselors.
Yes.
So, Scott, why does a business need a travel agency? Surely we can just go and do this stuff ourselves online.
On the surface, booking travel looks easy, right?
Yeah.
From a procurement and company perspective, when you factor in things like cost controls, traveller safety and duty of care, 24/7 support, and more sustainability reporting, it becomes much more complex. A travel management company brings negotiated rates to the table that perhaps you can't get directly, helps you enforce your travel policy, supports the company strategy that you might have, tracks spend, and even calculates the carbon footprint. So I'd argue it's not just about booking a flight or the transaction. Mm-hmm. It's much more about controlling the risk, the compliance, the duty of care for your travellers.
Scott has a map of the world behind him.
Yeah.
Have you got pins on that? Been here, want to go there, been here.
Yeah, it might show up too many gaps that if I did that, so I keep it blank.
Yeah.
Now, my question's probably got a bit of irony about it, because Tim, it's to you. So pre-pandemic, it seemed that organisations really embraced travel. We went everywhere for meetings. I think it's fair to say sometimes they weren't necessarily required. Then pandemic happened, Zoom and Teams became a thing. Is travel starting to return now? Are we starting to re-embrace the being there in person?
Very much so. And it's come back at different paces for different industry sectors. Where we are now is a general consensus, 80-90% in the corporate market of pre-pandemic levels. So we're getting a lot closer to where we were at the end of 2019, the start of 2020. Then it obviously tailed off for 12 to 18 months, pretty much to zero. It felt like we're going backwards almost at points. And then different sectors have come back at different speeds. Those massive corporations that have huge global travel programs, they came back very slowly. They were obviously doing a lot of meetings. Internal spend was just slashed. maybe you could call it frivolous travel even, but that just went by the wayside. In the SME sector, so the smaller ones, the real engines of growth in the economy, that came back a lot quicker. And amongst our SME base, that was probably, again, sector specific, but probably back within 2 to 3 years at pre-pandemic levels, but being dragged down by the big numbers that the mega corporates have. Obviously, there's different travel management companies that sit in different sector spaces that some of the bigger ones, the global ones, look after the big mega spenders. So they felt the impact of travel coming back a lot harder. Those that are more nimble, those that operate in the SME market space, which is where we often operate, we saw that come back quick. And actually, the numbers were over 100% very, very quickly. So yeah, I think people realized that you had to go out and sustain those relationships. It's all very well doing it over Zoom and Teams, and that can only take you so far. But if you don't go out and see your customers or prospect new potential clients, then your competitors would do that, and actually your business would suffer.
Yeah. And so, that kind of echoes what everything that we've seen. Yeah. Pre-pandemic, I was probably on an aeroplane traveling somewhere in the world almost every single week. So actually that did great in terms of sort of stopping that. And actually it's interesting how business has adapted, because we're a global training company. So pre-pandemic, we were flying all over the world training people. Post-pandemic, all of that went online. Still a lot of that is online. But we're now seeing companies saying, actually, we're going to do a training program. We want to do one face-to-face and get everybody in the room. And then we're going to do some virtual training as well.
So I was very pleased to hear Tim reference the SME sector, because I run a small business. And I actually prefer to be there when it's justifiable. And you always have to use that word. I prefer to be there in person. I know you're the king of teaching negotiation, especially when it comes to teaching it remotely, but I still like to look down the barrel of somebody's eyes.
There's a place for both. And there's also cultural places where it works better than others as well. Karen, I want to talk about added value, because Scott sort of touched on it at the start in terms of, you know, why have an agency. But, you know, what is the value that travel agencies can bring? And in particular, what is the support when stuff goes wrong?
We have access to a huge amount of buying power that an independent person buying online wouldn't have. We have flexible flight tickets. We have refundable hotels. We've got DMCs, or destination management companies in resort, who take care of things. They are our experts on the ground in the countries that we work in. So that added value of having somebody who's got all of that buying power up front, it just makes things so much easier. If things need to change, you've got that support. You've just ringing one person, or you're contacting one person. They're dealing with everything else for you. And I think that's massive when, if you're doing things independently online, it's you that's sorting it out. Mm. You haven't got that person in your back pocket, so to speak, who's dealing with it for you. We deal with things regularly. We can often deal with things before they come. So last weekend, Air Canada called a 72-hour strike. Mm-hmm. We deal with those sort of situations all the time. So we had everything in place ready to go. Duty office were on that, you know, 3 or 4 days before, warning everybody that it might happen so everybody could be prepared. Those little things, if that's one person on your own booking online, it's you dealing with it. Your flight gets cancelled. You're going to be left at the bottom of the pile when it comes to rebooking, reprotecting. Us as agents, we're on top of that. We're at first thing in the morning or late at night, whatever the time is, sorting out, rebooking those clients and dealing with it. So you can carry on either with your holiday or with your business trip, not having to worry, knowing that someone else is dealing with it for you. And I think that's massive. Mm-hmm. Just little things like, as well, I take hosted trips sometimes. I took a trip to Iceland. Iceland is notorious for terrible weather. The weather changes like on a sixpence. Jonathan, you know this.
I do, yeah.
And being on the ground with our experts on the ground, so our DMCs, they can pick things up, sort things out. If you're on an independent trip and something gets cancelled, you could lose that excursion because you can't deal with changing and moving things around. But the DMC on the ground will just go, right, okay, that's been cancelled. Let's switch this to that one. We'll move that till tomorrow. You still get that full rounded experience of an amazing weekend, not having to worry that you've missed something because it's been cancelled and one excursion doesn't know about the other. You can't switch them. So the experience, I think, overall is a massive loss if you book independently on something that's maybe a little bit complex or a business trip or something that involves a little bit more, having somebody there to just take that stress away and deal with everything with the backing and the knowledge and the professionalism of, for example, our duty office, head office, travel counsellors, we've got that support and we just deal with everything.
Yeah, operationally, but I guess actually it's more commercially. How do you cover this particular aspect of your service? Is it just something that you do? So when things go wrong, you step in. Is it part of the package? Or is it something that you're able to be awarded from because you have such big buying power with the suppliers and the supply chain? Or is it something you give insurance towards?
I think it's a bit of both, to be honest. I think we've got a really good reputation in the industry. We work really closely with our suppliers. And us as individuals, we've got over 10,000 five-star Trustpilot reviews. And that's us as individual business owners dealing with our clients on a daily basis. We're not employed, so our service that we provide is exceptional. But it also works alongside the fact that we've got really strong relationships with our suppliers in all of these destinations. And that is incredibly important to us as a business, but also as individuals, so that we can best take care of our clients.
And there's a key thing that you said within that, that you have different deals to the ones that we can get as a sort of private individual. And I've experienced this because when I've been traveling, if I've booked it myself and something goes wrong, it's, oh, computer says no. You are stuck. When an agent has done it, it's okay. Yeah, I'm just going to switch the tickets. You know, the tickets have a different level of flexibility quite often that you just don't get anywhere else.
Scott, I'd like to talk about the structure of buying, how you go about purchasing the services, because in like a small to medium sized business, travel will often be bought like as a bundle of services, but bigger companies will look at things more strategically. So they'll split it out essentially. They'll go to an agency, they'll go to airline, they'll go and get hotel deals. So they'll treat things separately. At what point can splitting it out in that way give you an advantage when you're buying such things?
It's market specific to a degree. So you mentioned SMEs. I think here in the UK, an SME is probably ranked slightly different from an SME in potentially the USA, for example. If you're an SME business, bundling things keeps things simple and cost effective. And usually a TMC can bring more of their value through their aggregation and negotiation. When you get into the realm of multi-millions in travel spend, it might make sense to split it out. So as a corporation, you can leverage your own relationships and volumes to bring your own deals to the table. But that doesn't stop you partnering with a TMC on that. Often a TMC will support those negotiations, help with the data. And then, for example, if you had a hotel deal or an airline deal, your travel management company can book those deals on your behalf so that you're still aggregating the travel program together to get all the value around the duty of care and everything I outlined before, but you've got your own deals across the table as well. And we've got great examples of that even from an SME perspective here in the UK. You might be based in Crewe, which is a big industrial area of the UK with many big industrial businesses. They use a lot of hotels locally, so they'll go to those hotels and leverage their relationships there, get a deal, and then the TMC will book that for them. Or the TMC will go to those properties directly or those chains as well. And then from an airline perspective, I'd say that depending on your spend, often the flag carriers will have a higher threshold for corporate deals. So they might range into the hundreds of thousands of spend with that particular carrier. Smaller carriers will have smaller thresholds to get you across the line.
And now it's time for this week's fun fact.
And for our fun fact this week, we've got two fun facts about travel. And Karen's going to read the first one.
The world's shortest runway is on the island of Saba in the Caribbean, and it is just 400 metres long. Only specially trained pilots can land there in very small planes. I am not sure if I would want to land there, I'm not going to lie.
I've seen the Instagram footage of planes landing there, and I really wouldn't want to be on board that. I think you see the runway out of your side window before the plane pivots and lands on it, which is not right. Ethiopia follows its own calendar and is about 7 to 8 years before the rest of the world, and it has 13 months in a year. They're currently in 2017. Is that true?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Bizarre.
The fun fact. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com, or connect with us on LinkedIn. Search for The Procurement Show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, leading the way to realise sustainability goals across the supply base.
Tim, in procurement, you know, we love cost cutting. It's kind of what procurement does in many cases.
Responsible buying.
But a lot of procurement functions are still about how can you just strip costs out.
Yeah, I guess.
And that is the reality of the thing without necessarily thinking about the total cost of ownership. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is a real key point here, I think, because if procurement people are naturally seeing buying travel as a cost or agency services a cost, you know, that's a cost they're going to want to cut. So as travel counselors, as a travel agency provider, is there a return on investment to having an agency? And how do you begin to describe that and sell that? And so the procurement person can then sell that internally.
I think there's two pronged approach to travel. You've got your internal travel, which might be a meeting with Company A London site and then moving over to their New York site to discuss strategy, business, whatever it could be done on Zoom or Teams. That comes with, I suppose, most procurement people would consider as a cost. But you've also got your second key facet, which is your salespeople going out and maintaining relationships and developing new relationships and trying to bring more business in. And this is where I think there's a big problem, is that many organizations see that as a cost, whereas actually we should really regard that as an investment. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't send those people on the road, you're not going to get those new orders, your pipeline's going to fall apart, and actually your business is potentially in danger. And we see that play out time and time again. The companies that travel in downturns are generally the ones that ride it out because they maintain those relationships. So we've got to, in one essence, try and remove away from this concept of it's all cost. Actually, it's an investment. And if you invest in sending your people out more, logically, or hopefully, you'll find that you get more and more sales in and the company becomes more profitable. But essentially, it's an easy thing to go, crap, things are not going well. We need to cut back on travel because we need to hit whatever targets by the end of the year. We've spent too much money. So there's that element of it. And then in RFPs, you'll know a lot more about this doing what you do than what we see just in travel. You know, where we were chatting before about RFPs can be really poor tools. And we see that time and time again in travel. And the main one that you'll get is, depending on how big as an organization you go, but you'll be looking and weighted on transaction fees. So you'll get an RFP through and it will talk about benchmarking your general prices, which generally across most of the TMC industry, you should find that we're all pretty much of a muchness. It comes down to the service bit. There might be some specialist niches here or there, depending on sector specific requirements. But actually, we were given a benchmarking exercise, which you could get yourself, for example, throw me a price that you check 3 days before and then say, well, can you go and give us the price now for a London to Edinburgh return or a London to New York return? And what we will give will be completely out. So it's not real time, which travel has to be because it's so movable. And then the other side to it is you might be saying, well, we spend £1 million a year on travel. Let's just make a nice, easy number. And the transaction fee element could account to £20,000 of that £1 million spend. So you're looking at 2% of your spend. But you'll see in an RFP that when it goes out, is they'll score 25% on your service fees. Mm-hmm. Now, the challenge I have with that is that you're going, well, hang on a sec, you're spending £1 million a year on travel. You're spending 2% on service fees, of which the differential between TMC 1 and 2 could be a couple of £1,000. So it could be £22,000 with one, £25,000 with another, and £20,000 with the other. And suddenly you're going for the lowest cost one on £20,000 because you think you're saving £5,000, which is 2% of your travel spend on fees. And actually that is being weighted at 25%, and actually less than that, it could be 0.5% because you're looking at that £5,000 differential. But what one TMC could provide for that extra little bit of spend could be so contrasting with cheapest TMC. And that's where, as a procurement buyer, I think it's really important to understand what you're truly getting from the different options on the table and how the service comes in. But I think we've got to take away the transaction fees as a weighting element, would be a massive for me, and actually understand the value of a relationship. Is it a partnership you want? Is it just a transactional online booking tool? That's where procurement need to understand what they want from a travel program, because not every TMC, we're not the right fit for every customer.
No,
not every TMC will fit with every
customer. You mentioned a really good point, actually, because it seems that when buyers are buying travel, they don't look at the complexities and the nuances in what they're purchasing. You're saying, in particular, with running RFPs, and I guess understanding that in many instances, travel is an investment, not an expense. How would you go about getting procurement to understand the total investment of travel, not just the actual fee, but also there's a volatility in the arena in which you operate, isn't there? And when you've got a buyer who wants a fixed rate, you're really going to be quite pushed at times in order to deliver what they want when you're operating in such an environment.
We will often be asked by our clients that they're writing their own bids. You know, they're going to be tendering for a project, maybe with the Foreign Commonwealth Office or other overseas organizations. But that one comes up quite a lot, that someone's going to be tendering for an FCO project within our client base. And so they'll want to get a broad idea of how much will it cost to fly out to Uganda, you know, different times of the year. depending on your notice and things. But what we have to explain to the customers is that you might be able to fly in February or March out to these places for, I don't know, £700-800 return. But if actually you want to get someone else right now to go out to Yi'an the next week and back right at the end of school holidays, you could be looking at £1,800-1,900. So you've almost got to get people sort of say, well, actually, an average ballpark could be £1,500. Now, hopefully, we'll come in on average under that, but there will be times if you're traveling at super peak, Easter, Christmas, school holidays, you're clashing with other major events that may be happening in a specific destination, that those £700-800 tickets that you've got used to suddenly go out the window. And that is obviously very challenging for people to get their head round that we've got the last seat on a plane. Actually, there's only business class left. Mm. You might be first class left. But if your person's got to go, most of the time you'll see in the SME sector, they will probably delay the trip if they can, or push it back 7 days, 14 days to get a better value for that trip.
Yeah.
But sometimes you have no choice. That person has to go.
A lot of this to actually drive benefit here comes down to how we manage demand. I've worked with a lot of big companies to drive in sort of travel strategies. And the biggest benefit has always been how you can control demand, which becomes a bit difficult because if you then ask the business what they want from, say, air travel, you get a big long list, you know, and everybody says, oh, I want to go business class and I want lounge access. I want a limo to pick me up from the airport. I want to get the miles and all that sort of stuff. So having those policies that perhaps limit some of those things and manage demand can really make a big difference. But that's hard, especially if you can't control how people can book the travel. So is there a role here for the agency to be able to help manage demand, to be able to help drive policy compliance? And can you actually incentivize travelers to fall in line? Who wants to have a go at answering that one first?
I can start there, okay. Jonathan, and then I might hand over to Tim for that one. I think tech is your friend often in this arena. So, for example, you can use tech for your pre-trip approvals, and online booking tool can be preference to make sure that your travel policy is correct. Your travel agency will support your travel compliance policy as well, or compliance with the travel policy, to ensure that the employees are booking as they should, and then cost savings reports and so on. So Tim and our teams will be providing their customers with benchmarking against what the ticket was at the time and what the cheapest ticket was. And, you know, the CEO decided to fly first rather than business class or whatever it might be, and capturing all of that data. And then I think things like gamification plays a part more and more these days. And I know talking to Tim last week, he's got an example of that that I think would be useful to share.
We had a client where for a long time they had a deal with BA, and, you know, they got used to their points and status, and, you know, get silver status, you get the lounge access, and that was obviously a big key thing. Obviously, that's all just changed recently with the way you get BA loyalty. But what the business decided to do was, rather than always just put them on BA, they might have had a route deal or whatever, they said, actually, if people go EasyJet, if they take another option that's going to be a lot cheaper, then what we'll do is record those savings against what the BA fare is. So if the BA fare was £1,000 and, I don't know, Virgin or Lufthansa was £500, then the organization would say, well, you can keep a quarter of that saving. I'm not going to go into the tax implications or any of those bits on this, but essentially the staff were incentivized to keep a quarter of that back, which they could then use as their own discretionary travel fund.
Wow.
And that then made people, rather than chase loyalty with BA in this instance, they were chasing the best value that suited their business objectives. And if that led to a saving against their options, then they could base some of that value internally as a staff member.
Yeah.
Now, over time, maybe over 5 years, you could actually almost phase that out. You don't need to give that, but you just have to influence that traveler behavior, because that's the biggest challenge. It might be one of the questions we were going to come to later is loyalty. You have a lot of organizations who will want to get people to take the best fare on the day. So if you're going to Frankfurt, if Lufthansa is £200 and BA is £400 for the similar flights, you know, give or take half an hour here or there, then you would go Lufthansa. But what you'll find is a lot of the people on the front line in the TMC community is they will be being pushed by the traveler because they've got BA loyalty to take BA because they want to build up and get that status and re-earn for the next year and so on and so forth. And that is the biggest challenge I think you'll find from those who manage travel within an organization and those on the procurement side is, why do people keep going outside of what is best value for the business?
Yep.
The airlines, they've got it sewn up with those loyalty schemes. Karen, what do you think on that?
It's really tricky, isn't it, with loyalty schemes? From a leisure point of view, we can't use BA points or things like that against a client's booking. So they can book their own flights, we can then book their ground arrangements. The issue with that then becomes that it's not an at all protected package from a leisure perspective. Mm-hmm. So that then becomes difficult and complicated in another situation that we can't apply the same kind of level of standard and care that if something changes, the flight gets cancelled or it goes wrong, we then can't support the flight because they've used their loyalty scheme to pay for their flights and so on and so forth. So it just opens a bit of a can of worms. I mean, the whole point for us is to offer that continuation of amazing customer service. And if we can't do that because they've used their loyalty points, it just becomes difficult.
It just happens, doesn't it? Even when it comes to fuel cards, it's everywhere. You know, you might choose, in the UK, we have a scheme called Nectar. So you might choose to refuel your company car at a petrol station that serves Nectar because you want the loyalty points.
And it's the same with the loyalty scheme for the procurement show.
Absolutely. Yeah. The more you listen, the better at procurement you become.
So I think just sort of following on from what you've said there, Karen, I just want to talk about traveller well-being. Because, as I said, I used to travel each week and stuff would go wrong. And it occurs, you know, travel can be a really difficult thing. So when 9/11 happened, I wasn't stuck, but the company that I was working with at the time, a lot of their people got stuck in different parts of the world and their travel providers sort of sprang into action and looked after everybody. They literally had to stay there for, I think, 3 weeks it was. And when flights started happening again, the first flight was full of people from this particular company. You know, the agent had gone to a lot of effort to make sure that that happened. But stuff can go wrong when we're traveling. And there's also this thing about making sure that the traveler is safe. So how do you do that?
I mean, everything that we do is obviously recorded in our system. So we've got access to everybody's itineraries. We always ask for insurance information in case anybody needs that, because there's situations sometimes where something might happen to the traveller and nobody's got access to that. So we try and ask for that. I think for solo female travellers, it's really important. Mm-hmm. There are different things such as floors in hotels that have these non-access.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite a relatively new thing now where people who aren't staying at the hotel can't get to the rooms and things like that. Knowing those sort of things, I think, can really help. Just providing that safety aspect for just solo travellers, I think, really, not necessarily just female travellers, but also we know where everybody is. We know where they are. We can help them. We can provide support. We have a 24-hour duty office. We also have that everybody gets my WhatsApp number when they book, which is quite interesting at times.
Does that mean you get calls in the middle of the night?
Yes, it does.
Jonathan has the same problem.
I do.
It does happen a lot. And, you know, the amount of people I've rescued before 6 a.m. in the morning in my pyjamas.
Really?
Yeah.
That's nothing to do with work either.
I've actually just got this vision of you getting off an emergency plane in your pyjamas, literally rescuing people in person.
If you've seen Batman, it's like Karen in a pyjamas.
Not all heroes wear.
To the rescue.
There you go. That is very true. Or Friday night after a couple of gin and tonics. That was a Canada wildfires a couple of years ago. And just being able to support people. And I think for anybody who is slightly anxious, we are there all the time to answer their questions, help them with their passport information, help them with their visa requirements, inoculations. It's all of those things. It's just having that one person, that point of contact that if you're not sure about something, what do I do? Okay, I'll ask Karen or I'll ask whoever. So I think it's that alongside the fact that we have everything in place, that we've got an app where all the documentation comes through on. So for example, if you lose your tickets or something like that, it's all looked after on the app. I mean, it's something little, but it's just those sorts of things that we provide that support that means everybody's kind of got that double layer. If you go away and you book something on your own, you don't tell anyone where you're going or what you're doing. No one's going to know what could potentially happen. So it's just having that someone else knowing where you are, someone else having your itinerary, just being able to reach out to somebody if you get stuck.
And somebody in their pyjamas when you need them.
Yeah.
We'll be right back in just a moment.
Meet Ruby.
Hello.
Your negotiation co-pilot powered by AI.
Oh, yes.
Ruby guides you and your team to plan your negotiation.
Yay.
And because it's built on the famous red sheet method, you can be certain of the best outcome. And if you need help, just ask Ruby.
I'll help you.
Or access the onboard learning.
Don't forget.
I haven't forgotten. I'm saving the best till last. Because Ruby can then do the negotiation. Using AI and our 20 years negotiation experience, Ruby is one of the best trained negotiators you will find. If you want to win, role play with Ruby.
Yay!
To find out more, just search Ruby Negotiation or visit positivepurchasing.com.
The Procurement Show with Jonathan. O'Brien, the procurement show.
So a question, I guess, probably to Scott, actually, is travel solutions, are they unique to certain businesses? You know, so if you've got a company, and I did a lot of work with GlaxoSmithKline, for example, some years ago. So they've got a head office in Philadelphia, an office in London. And so there was literally one route that BA used to run, which was, I think I'm correct in saying, that route existed because of the traffic between those two head office locations. So, you know, is it specific where you've got city pairs? You know, you're then going to work on a specific arrangement there, particular hotel chains and so on. And can that be an advantage if you're a big company and you start profiling your travel spend for how you're set up?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a little bit different for every business or every segment. But if you're a global firm, you likely need a hub-to-hub strategy where you're traveling between major cities. I know of cases, for example, where a large global bank would have bought the hotel across the road from it in New York back in the day because they had so many employees traveling to and from the head office in New York. It's not really available to SME companies, but for them, they need more cost control and flexibility because often they'll be flying into secondary or a lot of other destinations as well. So again, it's dependent on the companies, but I think the principles overall are the same. It's around data-driven decisions, duty of care and sustainability, and ensuring those routes, those hubs, those destinations stack up to what the company needs.
I'm going to mention it.
Don't hold yourself back. Just resist the temptation.
Oh, no. It's the fourth square on the procurement show bingo
procurement
card.
Bingo.
Yeah,
okay.
Which is AI. Okay,
there it is.
Yeah, sorry about that, mate. So ChatGPT-5 apparently is capable of devising on and organising things like travel. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know how.
Have you tried it?
No, I haven't. See, now, actually, I'm probably answering my own question because I would be scared to do so. I probably wouldn't trust it. I don't know how far it can go transactionally, whether it can book, and probably not at the moment.
It can. It can book.
It?
If you give it all your passwords and your inside leg measurement, it will book the travel for you.
Not go in there. How do you think that's going to shake up the industry that you're operating in?
Absolutely not. I think it's a great tool and we use it really well at Travel Counsellors. It's in our tech with our quotes, our itineraries that we provide, and it is great in that sense. However, it's not going to rescue somebody when you're in your pyjamas at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I think that's the key, is working together with using it as a great tool. But is it going to provide you with such and such a restaurant in, I don't know, the restaurant that we went to in Reykjavik that I recommend to clients that I've been to, I've experienced it, I know it's great. They might recommend you something, but do you know that that's something that you're going to like? So it's those personal touches, that personal recommendation, that I think utilising that alongside it is a great tool and it's a great way to book your travel. But to rely on it solely, missing that human interaction, I think, is massive. But yeah, definitely we use it. It's great. And it's a really positive addition to us at Travel Counsellors. Our itineraries and our quotes have really come on in leaps and bounds. The tech and tools that we use are fantastic. And we are utilising AI massively for those things. But it still can't rescue somebody when there's a flight being cancelled or, you know, what happens. You could plan an amazing itinerary, but if one element of that itinerary fails, what do? You've got nobody there to pick you up and look after you and rescue you. The cape-wearing hero in their pyjamas.
But it won't be long before Pajama Bot arrives at your hotel room.
Oh,
I'm here to help you.
No, please don't go there.
I'm going to happen.
Pass the question to Scott and Tim with regards to actually buying services and utilising AI on that level. Mm.
AI is going to enhance all the TMCs and the businesses that are relying on the TMC community. So you'll find all the travel management companies are using AI to improve efficiencies internally, probably improve online booking tools and the recommendations that people get, and also avoid certain districts. You know, there's a classic one that there's a couple of square blocks in San Francisco that you really don't want to go to because about 50% of the murders happen within those two bits. And you always wonder why there's a couple of cheap hotels in that little bit. AI, I would imagine that at some point will be, this is why you probably don't want to take these small selection of hotels because it could be a little bit risky. But what AI is not really ever going to do, like Karen said, is it's not going to care for people when people go wrong. It's just going to be working off an algorithm. It's not going to know you. It's not going to know your nuances or who maybe to contact should something go wrong. It's actually playing back to what's a topic we briefly covered earlier, is we had a scenario where a client we've looked after for a long time just no showed out of the blue for a flight back from the States to come back home. And I was talking to my team going, why has he not got on his flight? What's happened? That's so unlike him to never get on an aeroplane. And we've got that history with that client over the years that we spotted that and we're like, hang on a sec, something's not right. So we sent him an email and he turned around and said, well, actually, at the time I was supposed to be getting on the aeroplane, I was in hospital in America because a car had crashed and hit me on the sidewalk as I was walking along as a pedestrian. And if it had been a little bit worse, he might not have been on that plane back as a living person. So anyway, we were able to get hold of British Airways and say, look, this is what's happened. He sent over a copy of his hospital report. Not say he couldn't have done this himself, but he wasn't really in the position to want to deal with this. And we got him booked without charge for the next day to come home. And that's something that you can do really as a human, relying on an algorithm to try and understand the nuances of scenarios. I think AI is a long way from that kind of thing. AI is going to bring a lot of positive benefits. But ironically, as we talk about using AI as a research tool, my worry is that everybody ends up in the same restaurant in Gibraltar tonight at 6 o'clock after this podcast, because we've all been told to go to the same place because that's what's supposed to be really popular.
Yeah.
But I actually hate seafood. I have no interest. Okay, I could refine my inputs into the AI. I don't want a seafood restaurant. But again, it's like if people are going to use it for travel, you've got to use it in an intelligent, informed and educated way. Otherwise, if you put garble in, you're just going to get garble back out of that tool. So
yeah. And we'll join you in that restaurant later.
Yeah.
And then maybe Pajama Bot will arrive. I'm here to help you.
There's a few things that you mentioned. I think it's only fair since you're sharing so much insight into organising travel and how it operates and how you buy it and how you procure it and work around it, to actually try and unpick the services that you actually provide. Because you've mentioned about restaurant booking, you've mentioned about potential repatriation scenarios, also dealing with accidents and incidents and saving somebody in your pyjamas. How would you describe it? Is it like a full service travel facilitation, literally from door to door, and all the experiences that go in between? Because for time poor CEOs, this is a real thing.
Yeah, it is gold dust. I mean, I can provide as much or as little as people want. So I can arrange transport to airports, all private transfers throughout at certain times, excursions, experiences. I specialize in sort of premium leisure. So, you know, if anybody's traveling for an anniversary, we always email out the bells and whistles requests, you know, to see what we're going to get. And most people, again, when you send it from a reputable travel company email, and I'm a gold travel counsellor as well, so that means that they know that you're successful and you look after your clients and you go that extra mile, the things, the extras that people get. And I often get photos of saying, oh, thanks, Karen, for the champagne or whatever. And it's just because we've asked for it. So it's everything. Yeah. Booking restaurants, booking experiences, and also personal recommendation. You know, if I've been somewhere or I know somebody who's been there, we work together as a massive community of experts. So we share our knowledge. So to be able to say, well, yeah, you could do this. Or what about if you tried that, you will get this experience. Or just, I don't know, I know a client of mine who absolutely spends a lot of money on a luxury holiday. She loves to go to really nice places. And I was watching a program about a yacht cruise, actually in the Med. And I messaged her and said, look, watch this. I think you'll really like it. The next thing she knows, she's booked it. Best holiday she's ever had. Absolutely loved it. Because I know what she likes. I know what she's interested in. And you can make those recommendations. And I think that getting to know your clients really, really helps and just ensures that they get that full rounded experience. So, you know, it's your 1-2 weeks of the year. You don't want it to go wrong.
Yeah.
You don't want it to be half-assed. You know, you don't want it to be kind of mediocre. You want your holiday to be a proper wow. Yeah. I'm obviously talking from a leisure perspective, not corporate like Scott and Tim are, but I think that's massive. And lots of people who don't have a lot of time to spend researching. And actually also going off on a bit of a tangent, I quite like working with the clients who like to do the research and you work together with them, because I get so many people who say, yeah, but I love the research part of it. I said, yeah, so do I. Come on, let's do it together. Let's see what we can make, you know, elevate your experience to another level. So I think that to me is a massive benefit of working with someone who knows what they're talking about.
And there's a lot of crossovers here, I think, because we're talking sort of individual travel there and how you can provide that full service. And we're also talking corporate travel, you know, multi-million pound spends on corporate travel as well. And what is the right mix of things that the travel agency will provide? I guess there's also that sort of thing in the middle where you've got the SMEs, maybe the medium-sized companies. I've heard a lot of people sort of say, you know, we don't need a travel agency. We can just do this ourselves. We can book the low-cost carriers ourselves because, you know, we're not a company. We can't do the big deals, but we'll just book low-cost carriers. Is there any benefit there with using an agency? Are you just going to be booking the same low-cost carrier that they're going to be booking, or is there something different?
Specifically from a leisure perspective, and that's really important to differentiate leisure and corporate, when we use low-cost carrier flights in a leisure package, we provide ATOL and package protection within there.
So it's the protection.
It is massive, right. And that's a small fee that we include within the package so that if the flight gets cancelled or the hotel gets cancelled, that's picked up and, you know, the whole package is protected. I know that's very different from a corporate perspective, so I will let Scott and Tim come back on that. But that's the added value. It's not necessarily that you get it any cheaper. It's not about the price. It's about the package protection and the service, the same old that we've just talked about, those additions that we can provide as experts above and beyond. So it might not be for everybody, but when you're buying on a big scale, I think sometimes things like that, certainly from a leisure perspective, things like that can be difficult.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's worth paying a little bit more, having someone else to deal with it. And if it goes wrong, you are looked after.
Tim, Scott, what's it like for the big boys?
I think you're getting a sense of the scope of services that a TMC can offer that aren't necessarily going to fall into a direct scope of services contracts. The services that a TMC provides, the procurement people at the start of the process will be buying the travel. They'll be looking to cover as much of the services they can. But I think from a relationship and partnership perspective, there's always the complete value add that TMCs provide that perhaps aren't captured. I think whether it's the descriptions that Karen's given or Tim, that we go above and beyond the contracts often to make sure that our customers' employees are safe, that they travel well, that they deliver on everything that they need. So I think for me, from a procurement perspective, I guess it's that kind of value that TMCs bring.
Yeah, and I think it's unique to each organisation. So if you are based by Stansted, that's an easy target because you've got Ryanair with a massive base, EasyJet with a few flights. And if you're literally flying your employees from Stansted to Gdansk in Poland, where Ryanair's pretty much your only choice for that route, those just happen to be your two hubs. You've got an IT operation over there. You've got your UK office. It might be as an organization that you just go, actually, we've got it sewn up. We've got a little corporate rate at a hotel that we use all the time. We're only going to use Ryanair. We capture our data really well through our internal systems. Is there value in a TMC? I would argue as a TMC, I'm not really going to bring much extra to the table that I can do for you if you're doing what you do really well. But you're going to be paying me a service fee to do that. Is that best use of my time, my expertise, and you've got it sewn up? I can certainly advise you on it and we can take that off your hands, but it's going to cost you a bit more and you'll get those extra value adds that we've talked about. That's then up to the person in procurement to say, actually, we've got this sewn up. If something goes wrong, the directors aren't going to be liable because we've got everything hot, basically, just call it for what it is.
Good technical term.
Yeah.
But the danger is when you start, you aren't so specific to a given place, but you're sending people all over the place. So you've got a mix of legacy carriers, low-cost carriers. If you start saying, well, some people book their EasyJets here, but we want you to book your BAs and Virgins here, but then we want you to book this hotel chain directly, but this one not, is it becomes a mess to control for finance or even procurement or whoever. Yeah. And then there's a loss of understanding as who's responsible when something goes wrong. And then suddenly your traveler, the employee, might be piggy in the middle. They don't really know what's going on. And then suddenly if it's gone really bad, directors could suddenly become liable with the Corporate Manslaughter Act and all of these kind of things if there's no real coherent chain of what the processes are. And that's the danger when you start making everything disparate. But coming back to Karen's point earlier as well, is like she's talking about that service that you give to the leisure clients who need the all singing, all dancing, as it were, approach and really need to be looked after. As in a procurement basis within a big organization, sometimes organizations are looking for one TMC to do everything, but they don't actually necessarily tick all the boxes. They might have a brilliant online booking tool, but when it comes to that service of the VIP, the executive board, they're just not there. And they can't deal with it. So sometimes what you might find is in procurement, you might actually want to split out and say, right, we've got our 1,000 regular travelers that we are happy to use going down an online booking tool solution or whatever your standard solution is. But you might have your 20 senior directors, C-suite, whatever it is, VVIPs, could be 50, whatever. But you might say, these people, we want to be handled in an offline environment where they can just pick up the phone, talk to you, whatever time it is at night. We know them, they know us. And that's a different service model for those kind of people. And sometimes we're finding more organizations are wanting, especially as travel comes back at the upper echelons of business, is actually those top people now need that top level of care, which in other TMCs, maybe the staffing hasn't come back and that skill base hasn't come back quite as quickly.
Yeah.
And now it's time for this week's Ask Jonathan.
And now it's time to Ask Jonathan. Now, today's Ask Jonathan comes from David O'Connell in Dublin, who writes, and we're very lucky here to actually have a travel-related question. He says, "Dear Jonathan and Paul, I love the procurement show."
He knows how to get on.
Yeah, exactly. "It's one of my top 10 listens. I am a category manager with responsibility for global travel. My question is, with so many online booking tools and travel platforms, what should procurement's role actually be in managing travel?"
Well, really topical question given what we're talking about today. I mean, it's quite straightforward. The first thing is to focus on what the organization policy is and needs to be moving forward. Second, it's about using category management to develop the right sourcing strategy for how you're going to buy the travel, you know, everything that we're currently talking about today, and also how you are going to then choose the right supplier, vet them, and manage them ongoing, because it's not a kind of strategy put it into practice. Travel's quite unique in that you need to think about how you're managing it ongoing, how you're doing that cost control, how you're ensuring compliance. So within the strategy, you need to make sure those things are happening with the agency that you have decided to go with. So all of those things are the things that will enable you to buy well, rather than just leaving it to the individual departments to do their own thing.
Thank you very much. And if you've got a question you'd like to ask Jonathan, here's how to get in touch.
Ask Jonathan. Email your question to jonathan@theprocurementshow.com. You might be part of the next show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing and Proclius, the Strategic Procurement Toolkit, Academy and AI-powered workflow.
I'd like to ask about the psychological impact of buying decisions when it comes to travel and what it says to your employees and how it can affect employee experience and retention. Because at the end of the day, if you're sending one of your colleagues to go and do, I don't know, I'll use a real world example for us, a recording session in Scotland all the way from where we're based in Devon, which is a good, you know, 400-500 mile journey. You want to put them up some, well, I do, you want to put them up somewhere relatively nice, because travel time more often than not eats into personal time. Not everyone is compensated for travel time. But there is an impact between sticking them in a one-star hotel as opposed to sticking them into a moderately better value for money hotel and better value and experience. So do you engage with organisations with regards to making buying decisions there, the impact that it has on their workforce? And also, what advice can you give? Also, do you find that certain types of industries tend to travel in certain types of ways? You know, like engineering go a certain way, whereas everyone in biotech and procurement like five-star hotels way.
Or business class versus economy.
Yeah.
A couple of key questions there. I'll start with the back one. The answer is yes, different industries travel differently. And a lot of it will be to do with culture of the industry, I guess. So they'll develop their travel programs around that. I think some of it is swings and roundabouts. A few years back, I think, as people were trying to drive the costs of travel right to the ground, some of the traveler well-being side of things and the reason for travel was lost. But it's swinging right back again now, where corporations are absolutely focused on their traveler well-being, not only just from a duty of care perspective, but from acquisition and retention of good employees.
Right.
I think, you know, more and more top-level employees and others will be asking for the travel policy as part of the recruitment process to understand what they're in for. So I think that how a company treats its employees is vital to the way that they're perceived in the marketplace. So for that, I think the answer is yes, industries do it differently, but more and more it is about traveler well-being.
And I've seen that play out. We've been and done events with companies, and this was an engineering company. The policy was everybody flies coach because the president flies coach. And this was a piece of training we were doing in Australia. And literally somebody had flown halfway around the world in coach and then had to go straight to the session after that. And the guy fell asleep, you know, understandably, because that was the policy. But that company had a churn because people didn't want to stay there for very long. So, you know, I think it's a really valid point. Tim, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
We've got one client recently where someone came in, not quite at the direct level, but part of his contract when he came into the organization was that any long haul travel, he got to fly business class. It wasn't up for negotiation. And that was written into the contract, which, you know, can then put a cat amongst the pigeons amongst the others internally. But that's what he negotiated. And I think as travel is on the increase, people look at their baseline remuneration. That's really important. But actually, another factor can be once you start getting to the levels where you're really comfortable is like, if I'm working for an organization, but they're going to flow me in economy, but my competitors are going to give me a little bit of a pay rise, but fly me all the time in business. For at least the long haul travel where there's a reason to fly business, I think European business is an absolute waste of money for any organization. So if you're going to look to cut cost, as it were, you don't need to fly business in Europe or domestically. But yeah, you can see it being used as a recruitment and retention tool once the market's getting more competitive for recruitment. And like you say, we had some clients who were traveling to the US to put on shows, but they were only budgeted economy travel because the US company only ever did domestic travel. They never actually considered what it was to bring in some skilled people to run events for them from the UK. So they got clever with saying, well, we're going to book a full economy ticket and invoice for that, and then got a cheap discounted premium economy ticket to try and explain to them, saying, well, your policy doesn't necessarily make much sense. And also, we're having to come a long way, go straight on site, run an event, and then go home. So yeah, your illustration of having to travel to Australia halfway around the world, if you're sending salespeople to get off a plane, try and be at their best. And sell the products well, or if it's a case of training, actually take on board what you're investing in their learning. It's really important. And events is a really big one, actually, because it's part of travel procurement, can be the events thing.
Just before we finish, I want to talk about Scope 3 emissions, because that's, you know, a key part of what we do in procurement these days. So how can travel become sustainable? And are companies now thinking about carbon as well as cost when they're booking a flight, perhaps even choosing carriers and routes according to carbon over cost?
Very much so. Part of when we're talking to a lot of clients now running events, funnily enough, part of the budget now is to work out the total cost of the trip, including the carbon offset.
Right.
So they want to know, if we're going to send someone from London to Bangkok, what the different carbon emissions are if they fly direct, if they fly indirect, what the hotel cost is going to be. And then we have to factor in circa £25 per ton as a car. That's the numbers they gave to us as part of an offset. So we get that coming through, but also what you'll get as well, and what, you know, more and more people are doing, is that if you're going to Paris for a meeting, why are you flying? Unless you happen to have to get a long train to get to London to then get the Eurostar, more and more organizations will mandate trips to Brussels, trips to Paris from London as going by Eurostar. I think you'll find that when Amsterdam gets up to 5-6 trains a day on Eurostar, we're still a little bit away from that. We could see something similar happening on that. And that's one of the largest travel routes within Europe, is London, or the regional London airports into Amsterdam. So there is a big push. People do want to get it. I don't think it's happening really at traveler level yet. So that's the challenge, is to get travelers to buy into this. But certainly in the procurement and within the travel management and those who are responsible for sustainability in organizations, the quality of data and the reporting is really, really important.
Yeah.
Now, it's that point in the program where I normally ask for the top three takeaways. I'm actually going there quite quickly.
You are,
really.
Yes.
But it's very rare that we actually have three guests.
Yes. How are you going to do this?
Well, I'm going to say I would like each of our distinguished guests to give us a top procurement tip as to how we can buy travel better.
And you can't repeat something.
You can't repeat something that the other person has said, all right? Now, these need to be practical tips that we can probably use in our day-to-day lives as well, because we've talked about this a lot. Yeah. There actually isn't much difference between how you buy in work and how you buy at home. So choosing a name at random, we're just going to say, where's that land on the script? No, we're not going to ask you, Jonathan. Here we go. First of all, Karen.
I win on this one then. That's easy for me, because I probably would repeat something. I think trust an expert in everything you do. So if that's DIY, painting your house, fixing your plumbing, I can't do it. I'm not a plumber. I'm not a painter, but I do know about travel and I've been doing it for 35 years, which I don't think I look old enough for them.
No.
I think just trust an expert. We've got the tools, the tech, the knowledge, the backup, the buying power to do it just better, really, to enhance it. And I mean, on the flip side of that, I don't think I can be all things to all people. There are always going to be situations where it's not potentially, I don't know, just like a hotel in the UK or something like that. But if you do want to do something where you need to have some support and some help, just trust an expert. You come to me and ask me a question, I'm going to say, actually, do you know what? If you do it this way and we can book it like this or pay for it like that, do this deposit on the flight tickets, book the hotel, add things in, let's do that later. It's all those sort of nuances, that knowledge that I would bring to the table from a travel perspective that would just make your life so much easier and so much better. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't cut my own hair. So why would you not trust an expert to do something that they've been doing all their life properly? You know, we've got really good equipment, tech and tools, knowledge, support, everything else that comes alongside of it.
Tim?
Certainly from a travel procurement thing is understand what you're buying. I think there's a lot of people who just have a generic approach. They think they know what they're trying to get, but it's actually understand from your stakeholders, your travelers, the sales team, the investors, as it were, and actually nail down what it is you need from a travel program, what is core to making it successful. I could almost put all three into that one, because if we could get people to come to us fully understanding and to all the TMC industry, then hopefully you can get better outcomes for the buyers and the TMCs, and we can all come out of it looking really good.
It all comes back to the brief. Scott?
I'd urge procurement professionals to partner with internal stakeholders. So, you know, travel is such an emotive part of employees' life and holiday life when you go on holiday, right? So I would urge in the part of stakeholders, don't just run it as a cost exercise. You need to build a strategy, build your relationships internally with your peers and stakeholders, because often a travel program will succeed or fail at the C-suite or top level. So it really needs buy-in from that level and then support in implementing it going down.
Brilliant. Scott, Tim, Karen, thank you so much for joining us from Travel Counsellors. Thank you for being on The Procurement Show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Procurement Show. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com. Connect with us on LinkedIn, search for The Procurement Show, and visit us at theprocurementshow.com. You can also WhatsApp us on +44 7396 939933. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, transforming procurement with exceptional tools and advanced training. Produced in the UK by Fresh Air Studios. The Procurement Show is copyright Positive Purchasing, all rights reserved.
Strategic thinking, category management, negotiation, SRM, sustainable procurement.
Imagine if the skill set your team needs could happen at the flick of a switch. At Positive Purchasing, we have 22 years' experience in building advanced procurement and negotiation capability. With our unique skills assessment and tailored learning and development programs, it's no wonder we're the partner of choice for big companies the world over. Ready to switch on procurement capability that makes an impact in your business? Contact Positive Purchasing today to find out how.